Summit County historian Navi Vernon retired earlier this month after a long tenure here in Summit County. She joins me now on the phone to take a look back at her career. Good morning to you, Navi.
Good morning.
So how long have you been historian?
Probably, I've had approximately close to 20 years, and I think about 17 of them was the historian.
Wow. And how did you get into the job?
I don't know. I can remember applying for it. They were looking for an historian. Sandra Morrison had quit, and I had to go in front of a board of about 12 people and be interviewed. And after they listened to me, I guess they decided they'd give me a try.
Okay. So as historian, what is it that you did?
Oh, I think the biggest challenge for me when I become historian is when I mentioned I was doing history or the historian, people would kind of duck their heads. And I was like, this is going to be a challenge for me because I'm going to have to make history become interesting. And I couldn't see that in the people's eyes when they when you talked history to them. They was looking at me like, oh, no, I've got to listen to this. So I think the challenge was to be creative and make it interesting. And that was my biggest challenge for me.
Yeah. We know a little bit about the history because there's the exhibit in the courthouse hallway. And then, of course, we've got the downstairs museum. Can you talk a little bit about that museum?
Yes, that museum was my first challenge. We were having the celebration for 150 years, and I was given the job of putting it on. And I says, I will create a museum. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. But there was nothing but dust and junk down in the basement of the courthouse. And I decided I can create something here, and that's was the beginning of the museum. And once we started putting artifacts and that in the museum, people donated, and it's right full of artifacts now.
Yeah, so any particular favorite artifacts for you there downstairs?
Oh, my goodness. Sometimes people might look at some of it like it is old historic junk and that, but people have created and gave me so many things, and I think the old coal stove was the beginning, and it told a lot about the early life of people, and I think the old coal stove is very good as far as being one of the first artifacts, and it did cost me money, and they looked at me like I'd lost my mind when I bought that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else in particular that stands out for you?
I love the veterans. Little section, and then also the drugstore section. There's several little rooms down there, and you're all very welcome to go there. And I believe the museum will remain there as long as it can be took care of. It kind of runs itself, and you can go down there and just enjoy it.
Okay, well, that was my question. With you gone, is the museum still open?
And the museum is still open, and I'm sure the management will keep it that way.
Okay, so it's kind of people just take a self-tour.
Yes, it's a self-tour, and it's open Monday through Friday from 8 till 5, and people are always welcome to go down there. I was surprised how the people enjoy it, but you can walk around, and you can touch the artifacts, and you have to respect it when you're down there, but I've never noticed anything coming up missing. If I thought something was missing, it was because I had moved it into another place. So, but it is self-entertaining, and you can enjoy it.
All right. Well, I encourage people to go see, and it's too bad that you won't be there to kind of walk them along with it. But what did you have to work with every year? What was your budget?
My budget when I first started was pretty well there. Sally and them had established a trust, so there was extra money if you wanted to do something. But as the years have went on, the trust was taken away from me, and it was there to buy extra artifacts or create a book or whatever you wanted to use. It's been pretty conservative as the last few years. They have kept the budget immensely, but I guess they've had to do that.
Yeah, so what did it end up as? Do you recall?
No, I can't recall exactly, and I would quote you wrong if I said.
Yeah.
But it's been workable, and I have got grants through the restaurant tax. The restaurant tax has provided me funds for making the books that I've done. But the last few years, they haven't given me funds either. So it's been a little tight the last few years.
And who gave you direction? Was that Tom Fisher or Anita Lewis? Or
I have had Tom and Anita that gave directions, but mostly no one gave me directions. I was on my own to create most everything that I did. And so as I worked there, the people that have come in to me, and it's been the people that's really supported me at the museum.
Yeah.
And creating the books, they've given me stories and that where we could compile them and make them into the books. And the books has become one of my most subjects in the later years because I wanted the history written. I wanted it so that we had something there that was proof of what we had. And the history in the county is very interesting. But I've looked at the history as kind of as a stimulator for the tourist thing, more looking at it as the business, you know, for the county and letting people know what we have here.
Yeah. Talk, if you would, a little bit about Echo Canyon. Many people may not realize how important that was as the entry corridor to the Wasatch Front.
Yeah, Echo Canyon is probably your Summit County Museum as far as I'm concerned. There is a lot of landmarks out there and all kinds of history. You've got the railroad history, the telegraph history. You've got the stagecoach history, the Pony Express history. And we have created a book called Echoes of the Canyon that if anyone's interested, they may come and purchase books at the county, at the courthouse. And Janet Timms and Tim Timms helped me create that book along with Russell Judd. And it's probably one of our better books that we did. But I did love our Under One Sky book that Janet Timms and I created that is of the county. And there have been several books created. I don't know if a lot of people, maybe I wasn't good in establishing that there is books there that you can buy and enjoy the history of the county.
Okay. The books are for purchase there at the museum?
Yes, and you can purchase them there. And there's the first book that I did, and I'd forgot about it, and it was called Your History, Your County. And we've done that for the fourth grades in all the schools, and all the schools purchased that book. And I think it was the beginning of establishing how creative and how wonderful our history was. So Park City Schools, South Summit Schools, and North Summit Schools all purchased those. And Lola Vito Box and Janet Timms helped me with that. And I do think it was one of the best projects that I did as far as creating and letting people know what history we did have in the county. The grown-ups like it as well as the children did. So,
yeah.
But we have all kinds. We have Echoes of the Canyon, Under One Sky. That shows the beauty of our county. And there was local photographers that donated their pictures to be put in that book. And the latest book that I just created, and Russell Judd and son, was Memories Beneath Rockpore Lake. And I had to print that book and make the books of the county because I didn't have enough money to get them printed by a professional. But that book is sold, and I think it's because it was of the people. And it's been one of the best sellers, and I was surprised at that. So you never know what book is going to be the best, you know, as far as producing money for the county. But
yeah, I wanted to ask, how involved were you, if at all, in the 150th celebration coming up for the Golden Spike?
The Golden Spike, oh, I was excited about it. I think it's going to be one of the best, and the state and the county are working really hard to create interesting history of it. I did, fortunately, have just finished a book called Rails and Tales that we done, which is the history of the railroads in Summit County. And that and the Echo book will both be good assets for this celebration. I think it will be wonderful. I was really excited about it, but I was going to retire a year ago. I stayed. I kept having projects that I kept working on, and finally I had to decide, it's time to leave and get into something else. So I hate to leave them right at the moment. They're more than welcome to call me, though, for any suggestions or help that they need.
Okay. So what's the plan for you now?
For me now?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is another stage of life, and I'm enjoying it right at the moment. I found out that I have a lot of work here at home, and so I've been kept very busy, but who knows? I've talked to Nan from the Park Record and several of the artists around, and very creative people, and we might establish something to be creative with the county and give the county back something that way.
Okay.
I love the art. I'm an artist, a home artist just for my family, but I love to be creative, and that's probably my, you know, biggest asset to the county.
Okay.
Is creating something.
Well, we're going to miss you there at the county courthouse. Naveed, thanks again for your great service all these years.
Well, and I want to thank everybody. I want to thank all my coworkers at the Summit County Courthouse, the Sheriff's Office. I've always had public work guys working for me, the prisoners, and then everybody in the courthouse knows me. They've all been very successful in helping me be successful as a historian. And I sure appreciated all the people and the help that I've got.
Okay. Navi, again, thank you.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council last night talked at length about water, and members of the public showed up to talk about traffic and housing. In the studio now with a recap, Councilwoman Lynn Werpy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start off with the in-depth update on water quality. We had heard earlier in the week from Michelle DeHaan that our water's fine, and it's unlikely we would ever have another contamination emergency like we did back in 2007 and 2010.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in about 2011, we realized, you know, it's time to get extremely serious. We were always serious about it, but Michelle DeHaan is an award-winning water quality specialist, and she is a rock star, and so is her staff. And so she gave a really great presentation. Boy, as I said, I could ask questions for like an hour on it. And if you can get your hands on it, you ought to. But, you know, what she focused on is the distribution in our distribution channels. And then also talk somewhat about service lines where, so a service line is, you know, from the city utility, the line that goes into your house. And I had some questions surrounding that. And it turns out that her water quality staff does regular tests in homes. And what we have found is that there are no lead pipes anywhere in those service lines in town, which is nice because, you know, I live in a house that was built in 1980. You do too. And there was a lot of lead use. But, you know, there are things that we can do to create more awareness around that for homeowners. And, you know, that goes for schools as well and how they upkeep and make certain that there are no joints, copper, you know, the joints that are, the lead solder is used and that can get into the water supply. So there was that whole element of the service lines. And then in the distribution lines, you know, they do these wild things like the ice pigging where they create kind of a slushy and it takes out the loose elements that have, you know, connected to the walls of the pipes. They also do this thing called foam swabbing that gets out that sediment. So it sounds like you want to take off the stuff that's loosely attached that would end up in your, you know, your water supply, but you want to leave the other stuff on the pipes, right? So a really interesting conversation. And then, yes, it was a big night for water. Couple other items too.
Yeah, let's talk briefly about that. The council approving the contract with JSSD and also the lease of water to Weber Basin, and that Weber Basin then leases back to Summit Water. Can you tell us why Summit Water needs more water, or is that none of the city's business?
Well, you know, I suppose it is our business because we are all in, we're looking at our water supply regionally, and we are interconnected partners, both physically and, you know, in with this agreement with the Western Summit County Project Master Agreement. And I don't know why, you know, certainly there's more growth out in that area. And have they, I don't know, not been as proactive in creating water sources? But, you know, it's something that if you ever ask why we spend so much money on water, it's because we are ensuring the availability and the quality and the redundancy. I mean, we have water coming out of 8 different sources.
Yeah, but this was the company that boasted for years that its customers didn't need to conserve. So we don't know what happened.
Well, right. And, you know, we have, in the city, we've been talking a long time about conservation, and we've incentivized that by charging a whole heck of a lot for the more water you use, the more exponential your water bill gets. And that has created a really stable water use pattern. So we don't have, it used to be where you could see on this graph where if it was a really hot year, you know, there'd be all this usage. And then if it was a cooler summer, there wouldn't be. Well, now people are just saying year round, no matter how hot it is, we're going to conserve.
Okay. Let's see. Longtime Hillside resident Peter Marth talked about the Hillside traffic during public comment. What can the city do to consider his and other residents' concerns about? It's the commercial traffic, I think, he's most concerned about circling that neighborhood.
This is such a complex issue because, as we know, Hillside sits, you know, it basically abuts a commercial district that is right next to a state highway. And a lot of commercial traffic, shuttles and other commercial traffic, Ubers, Lyfts, view that as commercial egress. It is not. It's in a historic residential area. And Peter always brings up really good points, and I would like to see us be more aggressive in this. And we've picked up the low-hanging fruit. We did the bulb out up by Grappa. We've got signage. But, you know, what we've talked about before is just like on Kearns Boulevard 248, as you come into town at Wyatt Earp, there's a no left turn sign. And that's so that those neighbors aren't impacted by people trying to cut around the traffic jams in the morning. And so that's we're looking for those sorts of solutions. And yes, there's, you know, yet another study that needs to be done. But Peter has been, as he says, for 10 years talking about this. And past councils never wanted this to be a thoroughfare, and that's why they never widened it. So it's narrow and dangerous for pedestrians, and often, you know, it needs to be kind of one way at a time.
Yeah, we changed the behavior, though, of those people turning left into Wyatt Earp, into the Prospector neighborhood, because we had cops sitting there and ticketing people. So is that what we need to do here?
Well, I think that's what we need to do. And I was sort of picturing that, you know, as we know, people behave when there's a cop sitting there. And so I think it's going to take enforcement, and I think it's going to take a lot of outreach to our community. You know, we never, the whole MPD in Flagstaff and Empire Pass, and it's not even built out yet. And who would have ever imagined that Hillside would become what it has? And we don't want it to be what it has become. So we've got a lot of work to do there.
Let's see. The council spent a long time on a plat approval for 2 lots in the Park City Heights development, which kind of abut the Oaks neighborhood there in Deer Valley. Apparently, there wasn't enough public notice giving for the Planning Commission meeting. Is that what people are upset about?
Well, we send a courtesy notice out for Planning Commission. I think it's something like 300 feet around the property that is coming on the agenda. Some people got it. Other people said they don't. We hear that all the time. You know, I didn't get the notice. I know it's hard if, say, you're a second homeowner and, the way I go through my mail, I probably, you know, would throw it out with the flyers from the grocery store. So the notice went out. But nevertheless, we want our neighbors to be engaged in the process. And we did continue that. You know, it basically, in a nutshell, it was that the neighbors were concerned about whether or not those 2 lots that are now right in their development being accessed from their street, not from Park City Heights, would meet the design guidelines of their neighborhood. And they want them to be included in the HOA, which is a whole other conversation. And that's why we just continued it. We nearly remanded it back to Planning Commission, but we felt like a lot of the conditions were made clear by our senior planner, Kirsten Whetstone.
Yeah. So is that something the city would allow, that the Oaks have some say in the design of the units? I mean, Councilmember Henney said he didn't think so.
Well, it's something that Park City Heights agreed to in their development agreement, that they would follow the design guidelines. Because while I think it's notable to say that Park City Heights, you know, they're not building huge houses, and they're building LEED certified houses, and that helps forward the city's goals of, you know, net zero. But you have to fit into a neighborhood, and those houses are big and they're custom, and so that's the concern there by the neighbors.
Okay, and another concern that residents at the Oaks said, not enough water in the neighborhood for more houses, and they just want to be able to take a shower and put a fire out in their house. I mean,
that remains a question in my mind as well, but, you know, that's something for our, you know, something that they need to look at to ensure that they have good water. It doesn't, yeah, it's not something for us to look at right now in this approval.
Okay. And then just finally, there was a discussion with regard to the sliding scale scholarship program for recreation. We're talking about the Mark and the ice rink.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So did you change things there?
Well, it was came to us in work session, but we're supportive of looking at a sliding scale. So we've had programs in place that address scholarships for those in the free lunch program. So those are kids, but this is for everyone. So we want to reduce barriers to entry for everyone, children and adults alike. And so it would just be on a sliding scale. And, you know, our concerns, of course, are surrounding discretion and how do we don't want someone to come into the front desk with people all around and be asked, well, what do you make a year? So we talked about those kinds of systems. And we also talked about, you know, how to measure the impact of a program like this. Who are we going to bring in that otherwise wouldn't be able to? And how does their health and fitness improve? And that
yeah.
sort of thing.
So I think this came down to that question that we've been talking about for the last year, and that's the issue of equality. I mean, we've got an equal program, but is there the equality built into it? So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, one thing for certain is that in recreation departments, I think nationwide and certainly here at the Mark, and Ken Fisher has done such a great job with, I mean, he was already on board with social equality, you know, from the get-go, and has had a lot of great ideas. And so recreation is one of those things that, you know, it's a brand of our town, and we want to welcome people in as much as we can. And I think let's see, if we were to say the difference between equity and equality. So equity might be just giving, you know, anyone a free access to the Mark, where equality is saying, you know, this is what you can do based on your income, and it gives you access that other people at higher incomes have as well.
Okay. And then did we decide how or who gets to be part of this? And are we talking just children and adults within the Park City School District?
Well, that was something that came up. So at the ice arena, of course, as we know, a lot of people from Wasatch County are coming over, both children and adults. And so how much do we want Park City taxpayers to subsidize what Wasatch County is about? We thought that in this particular type of program with the sliding scale, we're just going to keep an eye on it for now. The most growth is in Wasatch County, and so it could become a problem. But right now, we're going to move ahead. And at the ice arena, it's just in the learn to skate and the free skate that we're going to enact this. And no, for no private lessons or anything like that at the Mark or the ice arena.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, history was made on March 20th when we closed on Treasure Hill. Such an exciting day. Nate Rockwood secured the bonds in February for a great interest rate. And that piece of land that looms over Old Town now belongs to the community. And we'll have a celebration in the summer once the snow melts, and we'll start working on a conservation easement that the mayor said would probably take a couple years to kind of finalize that, but mm-hmm. exciting day.
So for that $48 million, is it going to be a reduction in what we were talking about in terms of annual payments because of the better interest rate?
I think this is the interest rate that was anticipated, but right before the bonds were secured, there was some concern that maybe bond rates would increase, but Nate was able to secure them at the rate that he wanted to. So I believe it doesn't lower the rates, but I could be wrong on that, and I can check on that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
Park City Council Member Lynn Ware-Peak. You're listening to the Local News Hour. Well, the Egyptian Theater presents Mamma Mia for the next two weekends. On the phone with details about the run, I have director Morgan Perry with the Ziegfeld Theater Company. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday this week, and then it's Thursday through Sunday next week, a popular production with music that everyone's going to recognize, yeah?
Well, I hope so. My mom came and she said, I don't know if I'm embarrassed or proud that I know every single line and every single lyric in every song.
Yeah.
Because it's all the ABBA songs.
Sure. Anything that you do differently with your production?
You know, we really delved into the character development of the show and what the lyrics and a lot of the songs tell us about each character. I think that makes our production a little different. It is, you know, it's a jukebox musical because it's pulled from ABBA songs. But there is within the somewhat silly story of this kind of, you know, like silly farce that's happening in the story of Sophie trying to find out who her dad is, and the three dads being there the day before her wedding, all of those funny things. There's some great characters, especially some great female characters, the mom, the daughter, and her two best friends specifically. And we really delved into their relationships with each other, how they've become these strong women, and like the difficult things that they've gone through that have made them these really cool women that are best friends that help each other, and a mother and daughter relationship that's really beautiful to watch.
ABBA didn't write this as the story. How do you know the history of how Mamma Mia came to be? I'm just a big ABBA fan.
Yes, the two writers of Mamma Mia, the two guys, were just consistently approached, like, let's make some of your songs into a musical, let's do it, and they resisted, and then they finally gave in. They also wrote Chess, so they're experienced in writing musicals a little bit, and they, of course, wrote all the songs originally that were just hits, one after another, but then they modified a few lyrics if they needed to make them fit into the show, but I think they just pulled many ABBA songs as they could that could mostly fit into the story to make it happen.
I know, it's crazy though, right? How it all works.
It's crazy, and like definitely there's a ton of ABBA songs. There's so many, but it's fun. There's so many hits, like every song is so fun in the show.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your cast that you've got.
Oh, my cast is so incredible. Our leads, Donna and Sophie, are both so talented. Heidi Hunt plays Donna, and she's one of my really good friends, actually, and she is my music director for the show, but I said, you can only be my music director if you promise to audition, and she's like, I don't know, but she's so perfect in this role. She's a very, very strong singer and actress and dancer, which makes her perfect for Donna in general. But also she's a mother, and she's a really devoted mother, and she has hilarious comedic timing. So all of those things, for me, I was like, you have to at least audition so we can see if this is as good a role for you as I think it will be. And then it was unanimously. My whole production team was like, yeah, we have to go with her. And then the girl that plays Sophie, her daughter, kind of just came out of the woodwork. She'd never worked with us before, and she just came to auditions and blew us away. She's young. I think she's only 19, but she's amazing.
Okay.
And then the two best friends, of course, are hilarious, and the three dads are charming and bring their own quirky, unique things to the show. And then my ensemble, the incredible dancers and singers. So we really lucked out with the show.
All right. So opening night tonight, 7:30 p.m. and tomorrow at 7:30. Sunday's performances are at 6:00. And again, you're going to kick it all off again next Thursday through Saturday at 7:30, and the final performance March 31st. Tickets start at $29. People can get more information at parkcityshows.com. Good luck to you, Morgan. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. And they should hurry because tonight and tomorrow are almost sold out. Well, tonight's already sold out. Tomorrow almost is. So hurry and get your tickets for this weekend or next.
Okay. It's Morgan Perry, director of Mamma Mia. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:52. Good morning. Well, the popular guidebook, 100 Things to Do in Salt Lake City Before You Die, is in its second edition and contains a number of things to do right here in our backyards. On the phone with details, I have the author of the book, Jeremy Pugh. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
So how fun was that to put together? Did you have to do all of these things yourself?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, I've tested every bit of the product. For sure, including the bobsled track, which I will never do again at the Utah Olympic Park, but just once was enough for that. It's been a fun book. The original came out about 3 years ago, and then my publisher asked me to do a second edition, so I went back in and retooled it and found new things and updated some of the older things and took out things that had, you know, books are static things, so I took out things that had closed and whatnot. So, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about, you had told me it's not really just Salt Lake City, but the other title was too long for the cover.
Well, they do these in cities around the country, my publisher does. So there's, you know, I think Seattle and et cetera. And so they kind of focus on the capital city, generally speaking. But it's really kind of things all over the state, including Wasatch and Summit counties. I even, you know, have a kind of a large section about things to do in southern Utah. So the title's a little, you know, especially for park guides, it's a little misleading, but there's a lot in there for everybody, I think. So
yeah, and certainly.
Especially, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, there's certainly a lot more than just 100 things to do in this, you know, 40 square mile area. But what was your criteria for being included in the book?
Well, I mean, I had a range of things, you know, I wanted, you know, of course I covered a lot of topics. There's food, there's sort of outdoors, there's cultural activities and history, family friendly things. So I was trying to find things for all of those kind of buckets, if you will. It's kind of a bucket list. And then, you know, it was just, I've been writing about Utah and the Intermountain West for about 20 years. So a lot of it was a little bit of a kind of love letter to the place I love to live.
Yeah. So talk to me a little about the things you do mention here in the Wasatch Back.
Well, of course, I've got the ice castles, which are probably dwindled by now. I've got the Homestead Crater. These are a lot of these are kind of classic things, but especially for newcomers, I think, or visitors, this is a good book to kind of hand to your out-of-town guests and say, go for it. You know, and I think the Midway, you know, the Homestead Crater is like one of those what the heck's going on here kind of places. I've got the bowling alley in Heber, which is one of my favorite things. I like the burgers there. I've got the High West Drug as well, speaking of burgers, which is up in Camas. And I've also got, you know, just, you know, Stroll Main Street, which is old hat for parkites, but again, out-of-town guests enjoy that sort of thing. Take the town lift, you know, in season or out of season, I think. So.
Yeah, what were your top favorite things to do? I mean, did you compile a list of the top five or something?
Well, it wasn't really a ranked book. People ask me that, you know, what's number one? But I really enjoy, and I think this is something for everybody who lives in Utah, the things that have to do with the Great Salt Lake. I grew up in Bountiful and in Salt Lake area, and we sort of grew up thinking, ooh, the Great Salt Lake, it's gross. But it's really a kind of interesting and wonderful place, and certainly like no other on Earth. So a couple of things I have to do there are obviously go out to Antelope Island, And that's a great way to kind of explore the lake. And this is a great time of year to do it, actually. And then I also have, there's a Hawaiian canoe paddling club. You know, Utah has a lot of Pacific Islanders, and there's a group of people who have relocated here from Hawaiian Islands, and they started a outrigger canoe paddling club out of the marina there. And they run every Saturday, and they take guests out on canoes if you want. They're just friendly folk, and, you know, they paddle competitively and things like that, but they also just kind of welcome people to it's a great way to see the lake. Because once you're out on the lake, it's a whole different experience.
Yeah. Okay, didn't know about that one. You have any planned book signings here in the Wasatch Back? Or?
I don't have any up there. I've got one at the Barnes & Noble in Sugar House on the 30th. And I've got one on the 27th of April at the Barnes & Noble in Orem. And, of course, I'd love to come up in Park City and sign. So I'll be looking around to see if anyone's got a spot for me up there.
Okay. All right, Jeremy, congratulations. 100 things to do in Salt Lake City before you die. Appreciate your time this morning.
Oh, gosh, thanks.